Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to the Arvida Annual Results Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker's presentation, there will be a question-and-answer session. To ask a question during the session, you will need to press star one on your telephone. Please be advised that today's conference is being recorded. Today's call will be joined by Bill McDonald, CEO, and Jeremy Nicoll, CFO. I'll now hand the call over to Bill. Thank you, sir. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us today. We're very pleased to announce another year of strong financial and operational performance. But before we get to the results, I would just like to thank our very hard-working village teams who responded to the pandemic and really rose to the occasion and kept our residents safe. And this success to date represents a huge commitment from our teams, and we're really grateful and really proud of the team. So I'd just like to put that up front. So our key metric, underlying profit, increased 34% for the year to $51.7 million, which was a great result considering we lost a couple of weeks right at the end of the year. The other key highlight for the year for us was the acquisition of the very high-quality Sanderson villages from the Sanderson Group. They've integrated into our portfolio really well, and we're very pleased to have taken on the teams and the residents from those three villages. Our growth story continues increased revenue of 7% for the year to $163.7 million, increased operating cash flow of 49% up on last year to $102.9 million. Assets grew 47% to $1.9 billion. And as I said, our key metric underlying profit also increased 34% to $51.7 million. So if we perhaps cover off on the impact of COVID-19, I think very importantly, we were fast to action in late January, early February, in response to the emerging pandemic, where we implemented and focused on key protocols and modified our policies and procedures to structure us up in a way in which we could combat and defend our villages against infection. This went well to date. Of course, we're not through it yet, but we've had no infections of either staff or residents to date, which, again, we're really pleased about, and it's a credit to the teams. We've also been very focused on our communication and response to family and whānau queries over the period, and also very focused on communication to our residents, both in care and in our retirement villages. Over the period, we have contracted the advice of expert virologist Professor Lance Jennings, who's been really valuable to the team and I think greatly appreciated. Financial impacts of COVID have certainly struck us. We've had additional staff costs as we've had to stand down our more at-risk staff members. This is an ongoing situation, although we pretty much have everyone back to work now. And there's also been higher PPE costs, as you would imagine, higher cleaning costs as we have contracted additional services to help clean our common areas across the villages and our care facilities. And we've had higher security costs as we've had guards in place during alert levels 3 and 4 to assist with our security and other protocols. We do anticipate that there will be some negative impacts going into FY21 from the COVID situation. We're yet to fully understand the economic impacts of the broader market. But it's worth noting that we are well positioned to scale our developments to meet demand, and we're also we remain very much a needs-based business with strong underpinning recurring cash flows. Our stated strategy, we remain confident there, and I think over this COVID experience, we've seen that our Living Well strategy, which incorporates our attitude of living well care model, and specifically our household model, has held us in very good stead across the crisis period, highlighting the benefits of that household model and also the structure we have with our empowered workforce, which has really helped us over the period. Building Well, of course, our key plank over the last few years. There's been a really commendable effort by the development team, delivering over and above with 210 units for the year. We started off the year giving guidance of 170, and with the acquisition of the Sanderson Villages, we increased that to 200 units deliverable. But with 210 units over the year, that was a really strong result for us. Buying Well, as I mentioned, the highlight of the year was bringing in Queenstown Country Club and Bethlehem Shores and Bethlehem Country Club, three great villages that have integrated particularly well and are now operating very nicely within the group. And our fourth plank, Engaging Well, has really started to come to fruition now as we on the cusp of rolling out our new business, Good Friends, which we comment on the next page. It's really exciting to see that come to the fore and fulfil that commitment we have to community care and the integration of our villages into the broader community. Really exciting to see that. We've concluded our development with our partners in Australia, Five Good Friends, and they are pretty much at the end of modifying their technology to suit our use in New Zealand. Essentially, it's a person-centred peer-to-peer matching technology which creates that ability to match carers with customers. I think it's worth noting that the key feature of the product is the observational data that's interpreted through machine learning that enables us to inform care teams of changes in health of our customers so that both funders can have a better insight into where money is being spent and we are able to understand who of our customers needs prioritisation of care and so forth. So it's a very exciting step for us and we're looking forward to rolling that out. And if you do have the pack in front of you, you'll see a nice 3D render there of our wellness centre at Park Lane, which is coming along really well, even though we had to pause for a while during lockdown. So as I mentioned earlier, Arvida remains care-focused. We now have a total existing stock of 4,163 units, made up of 1,688 care beds, 678 service departments, which gives us 2,375 needs-based units and 1,788 IOUs. We also have a development pipeline there which sits at 1,687, a little lower than last year as we have executed on a lot of those units last year. So our care operations, our occupancy remains high at 95%. I think that's a reflection of our care strategy and our attitude of living well. You'll see that premium fees have gone up a little bit over the year, in an increase of 15%. Notwithstanding the fact that there has been a continued margin squeeze as we see our costs continue to outstrip the fee increase. Of course, our care suite strategy is going to assist here, and in this year that we're in now, we will see the first rollout of our new care suites at both Coppercrest and Aria Bay, so that's very exciting. We're also, as part of the sector, applying as much pressure as we can on the government to both recognise the increased costs that we've had over the COVID period and also that cost price squeeze situation that we're in. So we will continue to apply pressure there and we're hopeful that we will gain some traction and perhaps get some additional funding over and above the $26 million that was provided to the sector to somewhat offset the additional costs that we have seen over the crisis period. So to village operations, we've seen growth there through our greenfield development, brownfield development and acquisition, resulting in a 37% increase in income from village operations. That's terrific to see, and I know firsthand that our residents have really enjoyed the year and also been very grateful of the support and management and protocols that we've been able to put in place over the COVID, particularly over the COVID lockdown period. The total portfolio embedded value has grown to $389 million. That represents 72 cents per share, which is a 13% increase on FY19 if you strip out the the $88 million, which relates to the three new properties that we acquired. So very pleasing to see that increase in embedded value. It was very pleasing to see our overall strategy really starting to come together over the year to deliver our vision of improving our residents' lives and well-being. And that goal and vision has really been underpinned by the metrics as we see them come through strongly again this year, with a 52 positive number for our care net promoter score and a positive 55 for our village net promoter score. Care was one up and village four down, although I think you would agree that there's still really outstanding results there on any metric as far as net promoter score goes. Our engagement index for our staff across the group lifted 8% on FY19 to 86%. We're really thrilled with that result. I think it's also worth pointing out that we now have 80% of our care centres holding the four-year certification period from the Ministry of Health, which really is the gold standard. You can't achieve much better than that, and we're thrilled to see that now 20 of our 25 care centres holding that, with the balance sitting at 3 years. So we think that's a great achievement and a reflection of our attitude of living well care model. So if we look at the operational highlights, I think it was quite meaningful to have delivered over 31,000 training modules throughout the year on our Altura remote learning platform, which we pioneered into New Zealand a couple of years back. That's turning out to be a very valuable system for us. We had no significant health and safety incidents throughout the year. That also included the rollout of our electronic health and safety system. We also rolled out our MediMap electronic medication platform, which is a really strong improvement for our care centres, and we particularly bedded down our eCase resident management system for the year. And we introduced our sustainability policy, which will enable us to measure and actively manage our environmental impact. And also worth noting that all our FY20 carbon emissions that were generated through our travel use were offset by the purchase of 100 tonnes of carbon credits. So if we look at our development activity over the year, as I said, we rolled out 210 units, which was ahead of our guidance. Notwithstanding that, 95 of those units were delivered in March, which is, I think, worth noting, and that was just before our lockdown commenced. The development team was expanded during the year to strengthen our in-house construction capabilities, with over 70 new employees added. It's worth noting that our in-house development teams are operating really well, and those that we introduced from the Sanderson Group have integrated particularly well into our Arvida teams. So the next few slides cover our projects we've completed in FY20. There's some really nice pictures there of all the villages where work has gone on. There's quite a few villages there, and I can't get away from enjoying that look at the Queenstown Country Club with the backdrop there, the Remarkables Ranges. So we've now got some really terrific villages in the group, and I'll let you look through those slides and pictures there. If we look at the new unit sales across the year, total new units was 126, which was an 80% increase on FY19, and the average value of those units was also up 21% to $763,000, which was really good to see. The COVID-19 shutdown did have an impact on the March settlements, with approximately $3 million of those gains either not proceeding or being deferred. We've revised our FY21 delivery program based on the impacts of COVID-19. FY21 and 22, we're now proposing a delivery of 200 plus units, which prioritises the completion of current developments with a more flexible approach to the approval of new development stages, based on how we see the market conditions unfolding as the year goes on. And it's worth noting that villa construction can be phased to demand, with good pre-sale interest and commitments for planned FY21 villa construction that we have in hand now. And additional work will continue with resident clubhouses at Queenstown Country Club and Waimea Plains, and the Wellness Centre at Park Lane, and the completion of the pool at Bethlehem Shores. So our residents will be very pleased to hear that that work is continuing. Key projects delivered in FY21 this year, Aria Bay in Auckland. You'll see a shot there of our new care suite development. That's very exciting for us. The artist's render there really is a step up for Aria Bay, so that's very exciting for us, and we're looking forward to marketing those 59 care suites. We've also got 84 care suites and apartments being delivered in Coppercrest. This was our first project with our in-house construction team, so very pleased to see how that has met timeframes and budget and coming along really well. And of course, Waimea Plains, our first greenfield site, has been a real standout success. 25 villas underway, and will be delivered in FY21, and great to see how that village is kicking along. Slide 23 shows our development pipeline, gives an outline of our staging with the total current development pipeline of 1,683 units. It's great to see that, and we'll be focusing on that work over coming years and keeping a weather eye on the market to inform how we are going to continue our rollout. So at that point, I might hand over to Jeremy now to run through the financials.
Good morning, everybody. So on page 25 of the pack, we reported $42.6 million worth of net profit after tax, down from $59 million in the prior period. The key differential there was a lower level of changes in fair value in the current year as compared to the prior year. At half year, we had recorded $35 million worth of gains on our investment properties. This reduced to $22 million at year end as the valuers introduced some more conservatism into their assumptions as a result of COVID-19. These assumptions saw discount rates increase and unit price growth rates decrease in the first 2 years of their modelling. We have detailed all of those assumptions in the back of the pack, so feel free to take a look through those at your leisure. Total revenue was up to $163 million, really on the back of the Sanderson acquisitions, which have contributed strongly to the overall result. We have had some noise in the P&L this year with the government's emergency reintroduction of the 2% deduction on commercial buildings legislation. What we've seen is that some of the goodwill that was created on acquisition of care facilities, which was around $23 million in total, some of that's now been impaired as that deduction has now disappeared. So we've seen impairment of goodwill of around $18 million, and that's been offset by about a $20 million credit going through our income tax line to reverse the deferred tax liability that had been previously recognised. In terms of RRA resales, First time that we've cracked $100 million worth of resales in a 12-month period. So really pleasing to see the resale gain number increase to $23.7 million and maintain that resale margin at 23%. In terms of underlying profit, $51.7 million, up 34% on the prior period. The key thing has been the addition of the additional villages, and they contributed $9.8 million of the increase in underlying profit. And we can see that the underlying profit cents per share metric up 10% on the prior period to 10.2 cents per share. In terms of the balance sheet, we're now up to $1.9 billion worth of assets, a large increase as a result of the Sanderson acquisition. So they've added acquisition, $427 million of value. During the period, we've also completed the review of the care facility valuations. This saw a $3 million increase in the freehold going concern of the facilities, and that was built up in two ways, one being an increase in the land and building components of those care facilities, and that was partially offset by a fall in the goodwill component. In terms of our capital structure, net implied share, a value per share, dropped to $1.33 from $1.38. The key reason for that change was the issuance of shares to part fund the Sanderson transaction. As you recall, the rights issue was $1.15 and the placement was $1.25. So issuing shares at a price lower than your implied value means that that implied value will automatically decrease. Immediately post-year-end, we added a further $100 million tranche of debt to our facility. So we now have $475 million worth of debt. We also refreshed the tenure of Facility A out to 5 years. So our closest expiry is now in September 21, and that's that new $100 million tranche. Net debt, in terms of the gearing ratio, was at 30%, so that's up from 25%. So 30% sort of sits nicely in the middle of the target range of 25 to 35%. And our bank covenant, 3.1 times on interest cover and 35% for loan to value. In terms of cash flows, net cash flow from operating activities was $102.9 million for the year. We did have a number of settlements that settled without all of the cash flowing through. So there was about $8 million of additional cash that was received post-year end for those settlements that sort of happened in that crazy last week of pre-lockdown New Zealand. So in terms of our investing activities, obviously we've bought the new villages and we've spent a lot of money on the development work in progress. So about $135 million worth of development expenditure across the year. In terms of dividend, we've retained the dividend at the same level as the prior period, prior quarterly period of 1.45 cents per share. So that brings us up to 5.8 for the year compared to 5.35 cents per share in the prior period. In terms of challenges, and Bill's already talked about some of the COVID-19 related costs, we are still seeing that there's a perennial underfunding from the Ministry of Health in relation to the increased costs of operating care facilities, even in a pre-COVID environment. Nurse pay rates still haven't been adjusted and funding rates. In terms of the outlook, the development profile has been flattened to 200 units per annum. We will make sure that we are focused on those capital allocation decisions and making sure that we're deploying capital to projects that we think fit a COVID-adjusted risk profile. We do believe that the larger listed operators will see a period of benefit given the strong performance over the COVID time, and there may be some an ability for other smaller operators to obtain capital from banks in the main to fund future expansion.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.